Hello. Last time I talked about the general features, particularly the chronology, associated with development of Minoan and Mycenaean civilization on Crete and on the Greek mainland, respectively. What I want to do now is change the focus and speak particularly to the question of the role of the palace in Minoan society, in Minoan civilization, the implications of these palaces for our understanding of Minoan social structures, for our understanding of the political relationships between different communities on Crete itself and in other parts of the Eastern Mediterranean. So the most striking archaeological features of Minoan civilization are certainly these elaborate palaces, which have attracted the attention of both researchers and the general public since the work of Sir Arthur Evans at Knossos between 1900 and 1903. And these really are amazing sites. They appeal to our aesthetic sense. They appeal to our interest in this vibrant Minoan society. The problem, particularly with Knossos, is that the site was, in a sense, too successful. There's too much construction at Knossos from the late Neolithic period to the post-palatial period, and I'll talk about the post-palatial period in my next lecture. So one of the issues then is whether the functioning of these large centers at places like Knossos continued in much the same way from the late 3rd millennium BC for the entire period of approximately 1,000 years, when we know that there were these large structures, these large complex structures on that site. As in many other parts of the world, archaeological concentration on the Minoan palaces has, to a significant degree, delayed investigation of the smaller and less spectacular Minoan sites beyond those palaces through the 20th century, through much of the 20th century. Such sites would include other kinds of domestic and public architecture in urban centers, as well as rural sites. And we have a whole variety of rural sites dating to the Minoan period on Crete that are worthy of significant archaeological study. So this concentration on the palaces, while understandable from the point of view of archaeological interest and the interest of the general public, has hindered analysis of Minoan settlement systems, and thus the understanding of Minoan political organization and social organization more generally. We especially lack large-scale archaeological surveys over significant areas of territory centered on the palace complexes, certainly, because they were central places, but taking in adjoining regions, which would allow us to understand palace functioning in its context. Obviously, this is really significant. The only way of understanding how these structures functioned is by looking at them in their actual day-to-day milieu. We can't really appreciate how a state works by simply digging where royalty lives or by digging where the elite lives. It's as if archaeologists were trying to understand American politics and how American politics worked across the entire country by analyzing the White House in Washington and Mount Rushmore. It's not going to work. In some ways, we have more information on social and political organization from Mycenaean Greece I mentioned this last time, because of the identification of the Linear B language as an archaic form of Greek. Since the language used by the Minoans, who wrote Linear A, is unknown, only a few signs have been tentatively translated, mostly by analogy with their later Linear B equivalents. So, what do we know about the functioning of these Minoan palaces, both on their own and, to the extent that we do know about this, in a wider system of settlement and political authority? The first thing to note here, first thing to realize, is that the term palace itself is something of a misnomer. Based on archaeological research, the different architectural components of the palaces, and this is best understood at Knossos, but with other palaces as well, the different components of the palaces seem to have had multiple uses. And these include, for example, certain areas of the palace were certainly used as elite living quarters. That is generally how we would think of the function as a palace. One thinks of a palace as a place where the king or queen or nobility at least live. But Minoan palaces had a variety of other uses as well. They were used, we know, as administrative centers. One interesting characteristic of these palaces is that these are most often where the writings are found, where Linear A and later Linear B writings are found. They are also, they functioned as areas for communal gatherings, probably both secular and religious or ritual, if such a distinction between secular and religious worlds is meaningful for Minoan times. They certainly contained banqueting halls, probably associated with all of these different functions, with their role as elite households, with their roles as administrative structures, with their roles as places for communal gatherings. They contained shrines. They contained, this is interesting, work areas for craft production. They appear to have been centers of craft production for example, the production of pottery and metal objects, particularly in bronze, but also in copper and occasionally gold and silver. They also contained storage areas for staple goods and manufactured items. And the staple goods that I'm thinking of here include grain, wine, and oil. So a variety of different purposes. One thing I'll note, I mentioned this distinction between ritual and secular worlds. And I just want to emphasize this again. We've already seen in Mesopotamia and in Egypt that in ancient times there was usually no separation of church and state, as we tend to expect or to assume today. These were distinctions that people did not make. The same was probably true of Minoan Crete. The idea that there would be, for example, a secular world of administrative rule, state rule, set aside from a ritual or religious obligations among the rulers, would be meaningless. We're probably not going to see that distinction in Minoan times, and we're probably not going to see it in many other areas of the world that we look at as well. The fundamental features of Minoan palace architecture, however, given this diversity of functions, the fundamental features of the architecture remain the same in all cases. All palaces display some combination of a central court with wings of rooms leading off that court. Beyond that, however, there's considerable variation in the functional structures, the layout, and the size of the different Minoan palaces. The palaces seem to have been involved in central administration in a whole variety of ways, certainly as centers of governance, but also as religious centers and as key nodes in economic systems, places that serve to accumulate, to store, and quite likely to redistribute surplus goods flowing into the capital through trade, tribute, or taxes. In some ways, then, the palaces combine the role of palace and temple that we saw in Mesopotamia, for example. The question of storage is, I think, especially significant. Storage facilities in small Minoan households, and we've excavated these archaeological sites of small households through time, it's possible to estimate the storage facilities and the amount of food that could have been stored in the homes of common people. Storage facilities in these smaller household sites would have held barely enough food to support families from one harvest to the next, while larger elite houses, and especially the palaces, had sufficient storage to support much larger numbers of people. They would have been vital resources during, for example, periods of crop failure. And we can see how this function, the provision of food during difficult times, would have bound the population to the ruler, to the elites, to the inhabitants of the palaces. And up to one-third of the area of Minoan palaces was devoted to storage facilities. I mean, a very, very large area, significantly more than would be necessary for the needs of the people in the palace themselves. Most of the known examples of Linear A writing come from these palaces, emphasizing their position as administrative centers. Under these circumstances, it would be nice to know more of what these writings actually said. Many of the texts that had been at least partially translated, often by analogy and comparison with Linear B, are inventories of goods, which makes sense given the storage facilities and the importance of storage facilities at the palaces. The problem is that inventories are often the simplest text to translate because they're combinations of relatively simple signs for things with signs for numbers. So many jars of olive oil, so many measures of grain. Other texts are not inventories. Many appear to be religious texts, prayers and invocations, but it's difficult to get a good sense of what the corpus of Linear A writing looks like in total. It would be extremely useful to archaeologists if we had a better understanding of the decipherment of Linear A, and perhaps that will come. I will note that these palaces are fairly substantial structures. Thus, for example, the palace at Knossos, the largest and the most studied, probably the best understood of the palaces, measures about 125 meters or almost 400 feet on a side. Whereas the Gornia Palace, for example, is much smaller, but still measures 50 by 37 meters, or about 160 by 120 feet. These are quite substantial buildings. So there's some diversity in the size and some of the secondary characteristics of these palaces, but generally within a core of similarity in their basic architectural setup and their functions. There's also diversity in the settlement patterns within which these palaces are embedded. Now, as I said, we'd like to know a lot more about this. We'd like to have a far better idea about the total settlement pattern around these palaces. What we have in some cases is a more or less fragmentary picture of what kind of other structures surrounded the palaces both immediately and over larger distances. In some cases, as at Knossos and Malia, for example, palaces are found at the centers of substantial towns, with separate areas for what is probably elite housing, given the size and richness of the housing, close to the palace, and other housing for common people. The population of Knossos itself, that is not the palace, but the whole settlement, was probably 10,000 to 15,000 people at its height, which is a substantial settlement, substantial urban community, but still not particularly large in comparison to contemporary cities in Mesopotamia. In other cases, as at Phaistos, for example, with a population of perhaps 5,000 people, palaces are found at the centers of much smaller towns. And there's relatively little evidence of social differences between people living beyond the palace. That is, at places like Phaistos, we don't see evidence for elite structures, elite occupation beyond the palace itself. Relatively little evidence for differences in wealth and power between the households outside the palace. There are other large and small towns that exist without palaces at all, as, for example, at Palaikastro in eastern Crete. Finally, there are a number of rural structures that have been identified as belonging to the Minoan period, primarily on the basis of the ceramics. They're usually identified by the Minoan ceramics that have been found on these sites in association with stone architecture. The difficulty is that they've rarely been excavated, and it's through excavation that we will get a better idea of how these rural sites were actually being used. In the Neo-Palatial period, at least, and if you remember, this is the period after approximately 1750 BC, after the destruction episode, probably an earthquake, that destroyed buildings over much of Crete. In the Neo-Palatial period, then, after 1750 BC, large buildings existed in both urban areas, as at Knossos, and in the countryside. But when I say large buildings here, I mean large buildings that are not palaces. They don't share the architectural characteristics or, for example, the storage capacity of the palaces. These are often called villas or mansions. Their layout, the fundamental layout of the site, is, in the case of these villas and mansions, generally analogous to that of the palace. That is, they do have the central court with adjoining wings of rooms, but they're much smaller. They don't show the diversity of functions. They don't show the storage areas. They don't show the shrines and so on that are associated with the palaces. They look much more like actual residences, and it's hard to escape the impression that these villas, mansions, are in fact elite residences. But I will note that we then have to wonder about the relationships between people living in these elite residences, these villas or mansions, and those people living in the palace. Were they wealthy people, members of the nobility? How would they be conceived of in political and social terms? How would people in the palaces conceive of them in political and social terms? There are two primary theories about state government on Crete during the Minoan period, and especially during the Neo-Palatial period after 1750 BC. Two primary theories. The first of these is that Minoan Crete was a single state, governed by a ruler at Knossos, and with regional administrative centers on other areas of the island, with these regional administrative centers represented by the other palaces. This theory was put forward, at least in part, because the palace at Knossos is so impressive, and because of the variety of texts and other artifacts associated with governance, associated with the palace roles, are actually found there. That's one theory. The second theory is that Minoan Crete was a constellation of small independent states on different parts of the island, with the political centers of these small independent states represented, again, by the palaces. In this case, Knossos and the territory it controlled would be merely one of those states, or perhaps first among equals. As I said, the first hypothesis that Knossos was the capital of a unified Minoan state on Crete that took up all of Crete was occasioned by the size of both the palace and the community at Knossos, which are significantly larger than any others on the island. The preeminent position of Knossos is probably, at least in part, related to the agricultural productivity of the area around the center, around Knossos, and also by the proximity of a harbor just 3 miles to the north. However, in recent years, the second hypothesis, that there's a variety of different contemporary states existing on Crete, has become more widely accepted among archaeologists. In large part, this is driven by the duplication of administrative architecture and functions at the different palaces. When we enumerate the different activities that seem to be going on at these different palaces, it just doesn't seem that there are things happening at Knossos that are not also going on at the smaller palaces as well. There doesn't seem to be any particular reason to think of Knossos as different in kind than the other palaces. Knossos, according to this hypothesis, would be the center of the largest and the most complex state on the island, with much of the elaboration of the palace at Knossos deriving from competition between those elite people who are living in the palace and those elite people living in villas and mansions on other parts of the town. The implications of that site may be that the occupants of the palaces are not supreme rulers, supported by an overarching state ideology, as is the case in, for example, in Egypt. Instead, the distribution of other elite architecture, houses and so on, in both rural and urban areas around Knossos, and the lack of evident means by which the people living in the palace could control militarily other areas, possibly indicates the existence of an oligarchy, where, again, the occupants of palaces, like that at Knossos, were first among equals. So palaces played a central role in the economic systems of these regional states, these territorial states, if you like, on Crete, probably through the storage of food surpluses and trade goods and the redistribution of those goods to various populations within the state as a whole. Much of this redistribution would have probably taken place in the course of ceremonial activities and communal feasting, as well as the provision of food through famines and similar periods of stress. One significant question about Minoan civilization, and this is something relatively new compared to the other areas that we've looked at, involves the relative lack of evidence for warfare and military activity on Minoan sites. Again, if we think about a state centered at Knossos, for example, one of the questions becomes, how exactly would the rulers in the palace be able to control other elite groups that are occupying urban or rural villas and mansions? This is not to say that there's no evidence for military activity on Crete during the Minoan period. There's some fortification at a number of Minoan sites, especially coastal sites, and weapons, including swords and spears, have been recovered from archaeological excavations. However, there doesn't seem to be a great deal of this material, and there are virtually no clear and undoubted representations of warfare in Minoan art. As we can see, this state of affairs contrasts strikingly with that in the various civilizations we've examined to this point in the Nile Valley and the Near East. We remember Ramses II at Kadesh leading his army and inflating his own accomplishments and those of his army in battle with the Hittites. We remember in Mesopotamia the standard of Ur with its depictions of war and peace. In these other areas, fortifications are common, and conquest is glorified in literature and in art. Even in Mycenaean society, and this is particularly significant given the cultural associations between Minoan and Mycenaean society, we see in Mycenaean society a definite glorification of the warrior, of the soldier, but not in Minoan society. This may in part be due to the island situation of Minoan civilization and an attendant use of naval forces in military activity. Although, again, images of naval warfare do not appear in Minoan art. In addition, this implies relatively little warfare between the different small Minoan states that presumably coexisted on Crete. This is not to say that Minoan culture was necessarily peace-loving and non-violent. Characteristics that some have claimed flow from the emphasis on female deities and female religious activities in Minoan artwork. There is, for example, reasonably good archaeological evidence for human sacrifice in Minoan civilization, albeit in a religious context. And the evidence is actually extremely dramatic, not to say a little macabre. The site of Anemospelia, which is a temple near Knossos, was destroyed in an earthquake at about 1700 BC. And it appears to be the same earthquake that was responsible for the destruction of palaces, although there is some uncertainty about the dating. It may actually be a later earthquake. The interesting element of the archaeological research at this site is that there appears to be human sacrifice caught in the act on this site. The excavators found a temple, or what appears to be a temple, with a platform, a young man arranged on the platform as if he'd been trussed up, with what appears to be a spear blade, some evidence that he'd already been bleeding. Besides this, as I said, rather macabre tableau, male and female who had been killed in the collapse of the temple and who the excavators have identified as the people who are actually doing the sacrifice. So we have both, according to this model, the victim of a human sacrifice, as well as the people who are actually sacrificing him, all caught in this natural disaster, this earthquake that caused a collapse of the temple on top of them. One major issue is here that there has, the evidence on the site seems to be fairly good, but there's been a relative lack of detailed publication on the case at this point. We would like to have a much more detailed publication than the interim reports that we've seen. This is an issue that archaeologists are prone to. But this relative lack of emphasis on military activity and relative lack of glorification of warfare should serve as a warning that not all states will necessarily function in the same way at all times. It's indeed possible that Minoan civilization was at least somewhat more peaceful than contemporary societies in the Eastern Mediterranean and beyond. Next time, I'd like to examine evidence for the decline of Minoan civilization. We'll talk about the debates about how it ended and what the dark ages that followed that decline really involved. Thank you very much.